You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, our guest makes the case that the word misuse is literally the worst. And we hear about your grammatical pet peeves.
First, the spread of the Zika virus from Brazil northward has the U.S. scrambling to prepare for the disease, to prevent it, to treat it, and to look for a vaccine. The CDC is watching for mosquitoes that can carry the disease, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture is recruiting Americans for a citizen science project to help track the whereabouts of those mosquitoes. Meanwhile, Congress is looking at moving anti-Ebola funding to Zika programs.
Our next guest says that we've been here before trying to play catch-up with the latest health threat, from tuberculosis and bioterror to Ebola and Zika, and she says we need to learn a more basic lesson and invest in more public health infrastructure so that we're ready for the next outbreak.
Dr. Celine Gounder joins us now. She's an HIV and infectious diseases specialist and internist in New York City, and she's a physician journalist. Her piece on public health is linked on the Central Time Facebook page. Dr. Gounder, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure, Rob.
So describe our current system. You say we're playing catch-up, putting out one fire after another. How are we reacting to disease outbreaks like the latest, Zika?
Well, the problem in public health in this country is that it's funded through a very convoluted structure. So you have some funding that comes from the federal government, some from the state, and some from local municipalities. And none of that funding is guaranteed year to year. And it's also highly variable in part because of the types of sources that we get that funding from. So at the federal level, it's largely income tax, some corporate taxes. At the state, you're dealing with sales and excise taxes. And at the local level, it's especially variable because you're relying on property taxes. So if you live in a wealthier neighborhood, you have a bigger tax base and more money to address issues like mosquito control for Zika.
So what are the consequences of that when it comes to the practical reality of trying to get a handle on a disease like this?
Well, when you're dealing with a disease like Zika, so something that can spread over city, state boundaries, not to mention international boundaries, you know, you really can't be approaching this kind of infectious disease of this is what's in my backyard and that's your backyard and that's your problem. You know, we really have to have a more holistic, frankly, at least national, if not international, approach. You may remember, you know, going back to the Ebola epidemic in 2014, and so we were talking about having different approaches depending on what airport you might be coming through. And so obviously, when you have such different approaches, different levels of resources available to fight, you're really going to be exposing yourself, at least in certain areas. And with an infectious disease, that's not acceptable because it can continue to spread into unaffected areas.
You know, in the movies and TV and pop culture, there's often the scene where you've got the disease and there's the CDC with vans and trucks and people in hazmat suits rushing in to save the day. That's not really enough. That's not really what we have in place, is it?
No, that's actually a tremendous misconception that the CDC is in charge. You know, honestly, the FBI has far more jurisdiction on something that might be happening locally than does the CDC. And even the FBI has to collaborate with local law enforcement. With the CDC, they're really not the ones that come in and provide the services. They provide technical expertise, advice. A lot of the money that goes to local municipalities for public health is funneled through the CDC, but they're very limited in how much they can actually do on the ground. You know, again, going back to Ebola, remember the transmission that occurred at Dallas Presbyterian Hospital? You know, a lot of people blame the CDC, and that was really more a reflection of what was happening at the hospital level and the local health department. And, you know, CDC eventually came in and said, well, here's our advice, but they have to be invited in and asked to collaborate locally.
So it sounds like the end result here is that we're playing catch up. We're improvising our response with all these different levels of public health control.
Yeah, and, you know, essentially you try to put out one fire and then all of a sudden that fire is almost put out, like Ebola, and then you just take the money out of that and you apply it to the next thing. And the problem is that when you approach things that way, you're never really addressing any of these issues. You know, a couple of years ago, people were saying, well, why don't we have a vaccine for Ebola? Well, I can tell you, you know, if we reallocate money in this way, you're not going to have a vaccine for Ebola. You know, you're not going to finish the trials that need to be done. That's the kind of money we're talking about reallocating instead to Zika now. So you really do need to have a longer-term approach where you get the job done, you continue to do surveillance, you build up health systems that will prevent diseases from emerging and spreading. So again, you know, this goes back to the Ebola situation in West Africa. The money that they're, part of the money that they're trying to reallocate is money that would build health systems that would detect the next outbreak, and not just the Ebola, but some other emerging disease.
Talking to Dr. Celine Gounder, she says we need to change the way we approach public health to, instead of reacting to the latest disease outbreak that's in the headlines, have a longer-term approach. And Dr. Gounder, let's get into what that might look like. What would a better functioning public health system look like when it comes to thinking in the long run, being ahead of the next outbreak?
Well, I think you need to have more reliable funding so that state and local health departments can really plan not just for next year, but longer term than that. And, you know, that's definitely a challenge at the moment. You know, and the other problem is our source of funding, you know, as I was mentioning earlier, is dependent on certain kinds of taxes that make the funding levels year to year highly variable. So some people have talked about, for example, national excise taxes. So an excise tax is essentially folded into the price of a product. So when you fill up your car at the pump, you're actually paying an excise tax on that gasoline, and that tax helps to fund the highway trust fund. So usually an excise tax is applied to something related to what it's going to fund, so gasoline and highways. You know, maybe in this case it would be medical services or health insurance or unhealthy food that you might have an excise tax that could help fund public health activities. Some people have also suggested allocating some proportion of the Medicare trust fund. And there's some logic to that, because if you think about it, public health, it's, you know, really great bang for your buck. You prevent disease. And so Medicare, which is funded by the federal government, would definitely, you know, there's an interest for them because you see decreased costs in terms of health utilization in other ways. So, you know, that also makes sense. And then another proposal has been to just make the estate tax permanently extending that, and then using those funds to support public health. So, you know, it really comes down to having a long-term, reliable source of funding for this.
When it comes to the kind of medical research that it takes, I imagine, and tell me if I'm right, it would be easier to answer that question, why don't we have a vaccine for blank, if we've been constantly picking away at that vaccine, as opposed to, oh, this disease is here, and trying to go from 0 to 60 to come up with that vaccine while we're already contending with that disease. Is that right?
Yeah, you know, it takes, you know, in general, 10 plus years to develop a vaccine from the time that you decide this is something we need to do. You need to first make sure something is safe, that it's effective in a small group of healthy volunteers, and then you take that to a larger group, and then you do population-level studies to see, does it actually make a difference in transmission? And that process takes a long time, in part because you want to do these things safely. And so, you know, if we, for example, Zika, we don't have the vaccine, and we won't for this year or next year or probably for a while after that. And again, it's because we're starting from the beginning. And so it doesn't make sense to put a ton of money into trying to develop a vaccine for a year or two, and then it fades from public view, and then you wasted all of that money, frankly, and don't have a product. So we really need to be doing is thinking about what is the real threat long term, and how do we approach that? And some of that might be vaccine development. Some of it's also just the nuts and bolts of how do you prevent disease transmission in general? How do you monitor for that? And those systems are themselves not strong enough.
And talk about that patchwork. How do we solve that? That, you know, we've got the CDC with limited authority in any local area, state health departments, city and county health departments. How do we get those better coordinated?
You know, I think CDC has learned some lessons from the Ebola epidemic that they're now applying for Zika. So they had basically convened local and state health officials in Atlanta for a meeting about a month ago now to really help them step-by-step go through their plans for how to respond to Zika virus. You know, it wasn't just lectures in a big hall where people don't talk to each other. It was really more like roundtable, like, okay, I'm from New York City, or I'm from, you know, this township in Wisconsin, and this is how I'm going to be approaching, and having experts there available to help them walk through and chart out their process. So I think they've been much more proactive this time around than they were with Ebola, you know, which I think they were more reacting as opposed to being proactive in their advice. So, you know, I think there are lessons that have been learned, but coordination among the different levels, that's just it's the nature of our system of government in this country, and that will continue to be something of a challenge.
And Dr. Gounder, as we wrap up briefly, it seems like part of the problem here is we have a short attention span as media consumers and as political leaders. What would it take to change that mindset and think disease outbreaks in the long run?
Gosh, I wish I had a good answer to that one. It's fascinating to me how, whether it's HIV or tuberculosis or Ebola or Zika, how quickly these things fade from public consciousness. And yet you really do have people still suffering from these diseases today. And how to get that message out, I don't know. I don't know if it's a question of really trying, instead of giving stats and sterile numbers, to keep telling stories of the people who are affected so that it really rings true on an emotional level for people.
Dr. Gounder, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure, Rob.
That was Dr. Celine Gounder. Her piece on public health and Zika is linked on the Central Time Facebook page.
Coming up after the news, we talk about grammar mistakes that get on your nerves. I'm Veronica Ricker.
And I'm Rob Ferrett. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.